Hello and welcome to the Goldbridge Saves Football podcast. What a weekend it's been. We're really saving football. Absolute bangers from the edge of the box. Some fantastic results as well. Shockers too. Ange in trouble at Spurs. I don't think he should be, but Liverpool shocking result too. Manchester City Chargers case starts today. We'll be talking about what very interesting thing Martin O'Neill had to say about Pep being a goat, even if they do get caught out for cheating. And don't forget, a week tonight, it's our live show in Birmingham. Get your tickets now. What a live show that's going to be. Have I missed anything else, Will?
No, I think you've got everything. Well, you have missed one thing, Mark. All of that's happened, yet the biggest game of the season happens tonight in the second city, under the lights, the Hollywood Derby, as Birmingham City take on Wrexham. We'll be there, and so will David Beckham.
They've got a right load of people. Hollywood A-listers, Beckham, Brady, McAnally, Reynolds, Goldbridge.
Lovely stuff.
Brazier.
Love that.
Noel.
He'll be there.
Yeah, looking forward to that. We'll have a vlog for that for you tomorrow. But look, let's get into the show. Loads and loads and loads to get into. It's going to be packed today. But we're going to start off talking about the North London Derby. Some call it the NLD. I prefer North London Derby. Shocking, shocking, shocking for Spurs. 4 points from 12. So much to unpack. Was it a foul by Gabriel? Technically understand why people think it was. I disagree. Should it have been a red card for Timber? We'll talk about that. But let's start at the very start. Ange Postecoglou against Arteta. We said on Friday, whoever loses this game, it would be a crisis. 4 points in 12 for Spurs is a mini crisis. Ange has come out polishing his trophy.
Yeah, and
his imaginary trophy.
Exactly. Yeah, I've been big Ange's biggest supporter on this podcast. People have called me a big Ange sympathizer. You said I'll wash his car. Well, his car's going to be dirty for the next couple of weeks. I'll put him up there for Pratt of the Week contender, which we'll get into later. But coming out with his post-match press conference at the end, his interview just smacked of desperation.
He's coming out swinging
a little bit. Hey,
not like that.
Come on, you little. Fucker.
He's happily married. Is he married? We don't know. Niall will find out.
Come here, you fucker. But yeah, I just couldn't believe it. With everything of the history of Spurs and all the stuff around them with trophies, coming out after a North London derby defeat where you should have played a lot better and saying that you're guaranteeing success in the second season. I mean, if he likes pressure, he'll thrive under that. But he's just adding so much unwanted pressure and he's guaranteeing it. So he's got to live by his sword now.
Also, just a reminder, not that I wasn't listening to what you said. Man City's case starts today. Only you can set me free because we're guilty. Guilty as a club can be. Anyway, I'm just singing a random Bananarama song. It's got nothing to do with the Man City case. But Martin O'Neill said on Friday that even if Man City are found guilty, Pep's still a goat. I've got something to say about that. We'll talk about that in a moment. But let's talk about the North London derby. You know what? In relation to Ange, first of all, this might... Can I just shock you?
Yeah.
You already sat down. Ten Hag is always the victim of a massive pile-on, and having won at the weekend, bit of pressure on Liverpool, bit of pressure on Spurs. I'm actually going to shock you. Give me that sponge. I'll wash Ange's car because I'm actually going to defend him a little bit. I think at the end of the day, some of the stuff that was said about him last week and what he said after the game is, look, they've still got the Carabao Cup, they've still got the FA Cup, and they've still got the Europa League. He's got three chances to win a trophy. I think Spurs have played quite well. They just can't put the ball in the back of the net. They only lost 1-0, mate.
Yeah, but I also think the way it was set up, Arsenal let Spurs play. They let them have all of the ball, and like Arsenal still look more deadly going on the counter-attack than Spurs did with the ball. Like Solanke, like that one, the touches in and around the box, for the amount of money that you paid for, be so slow and just like, you want them to be like critical and getting the shots off. I just thought they looked really good up until a point, but then just really passive and not actually that very threatening.
What do Spurs fans want? What are they moaning about?
Just a bit more Ange. Come on, you can.
Yeah, but you can't be talking about Ange out or stuff like
that. No, I'm not saying Ange out.
Ange Posta no clue.
Yeah, nice. You've made that
up. I've nicked it.
Oh, sorry.
Like most things. no, but it's a joke. It's like, look at the starting team yesterday. Yeah, Arsenal were definitely always going to play counter-attacking with no Odegaard and Rice. They were always going to be a threat from set pieces and they score from it. Spurs, Ange, I couldn't believe it when he started the team. Really, only defensive midfielder was Bentancur. He's got Maddison and Kulusevski in a midfield three. Then he's got Johnson, Son and Solanke. It's attacking and they can't put the ball in the back of the net. It's like, you know what? If you get home tonight and your missus is there and she's got a bit of lingerie on and there's a bit of bloody Lionel Richie on and she's got a bit of jupe and she's got a champagne and it's a lovely dinner. You know, and there's a bit of, you know what, on the telly and the bed's got a bit of roses on and it's like, let's go. And you go, no, I'm off to do my accounts. Whose fault is that? No. And just set it up and they can't put the ball in the back of the net. Figuratively and actually.
He's
had a go. It's not his fault.
You're on completely the other wavelength. He set the team up right. You basically identified the two things that Arsenal were doing. Play on the counter and score from set pieces. We all knew that. So Big Ange has got to counter that and he didn't. They weren't effective.
What, part of the bus and take a draw?
No. But he's got to come up with a remedy to go against that and he didn't. Like, we all knew that that's the way they were going to play. And in and around the box, they were just absolutely honking. Like, they didn't really create much very key chances. And then you mentioned all of that, but we're just talking about... Say Man United lose to Liverpool. Man City.
We just did.
Yeah. So Ten Hag comes out and he goes, I guarantee success in the third season. Yeah. I guarantee another trophy.
What's wrong with him?
Yeah, he's not very well. But you'd be like, you don't need to say that now. We don't need more pressure on us. I don't know if he's trying to deflect pressure away from the players, but like...
What's he going to do? You come out to me after a game.
He doesn't need to say that.
You come out to me after a game and you offer up a loaded question, you know... You say you're going to win trophies. Are you going to win trophies? No. Oh, Ange Postecoglou. You know,
the big thing labelled against managers and a lot of the press interviews these days that they are politicians. It's great that Big Ange is answering and he's been very good in these. But just bat that one away. You don't leave that one on the off stump there. You can just let that one go through to the wicketkeeper. You don't need to come out trying to hit a six.
But we're also guilty of, you know, seeing a quote, seeing an interview and jumping on him. He got jumped on last week and it went massively viral. I saw it from numerous people who jumped on Ange Postecoglou being asked about the Arsenal game and basically saying that, you know, I'd hate to think there's players in my dressing room that value the win over this team more than anyone else. To which he gets absolutely piled on as an idiot again, because they're going, oh, he should respect rivalries this, rivalry that. Bruno Fernandes, Jadon Sancho has a big part in Chelsea scoring the winner at the weekend to go above Man United. And Bruno Fernandes, the captain of Man United, is there going, great player, nice to see a smile on your face. So we're going to pretend rivalry exists and then we're not going to pretend rivalry exists. Ultimately, what Ange was doing there is, I agree with him. Last season against bloody Man City, rivalry fucked up their Champions League. That's what rivalry did for Spurs last year. We can't let Man City win because Arsenal will win the title. So we don't end up in the Champions League. All right, Arsenal don't win the league. What he's saying is, I don't want to have players in the dressing room that get up for certain games because the downside of that... rivalry will make you not get up for the Man City game. So you get these absolute turbo prats going, oh, look at Ange. He's saying that playing against Bournemouth's the same as playing against Arsenal. No, what he's saying is, I don't want a dressing room that gets up for certain games because that has a downside of them not getting up for other games like they did last year. He wants a team that wins every week. He wants trophies. He's ambitious. I tell you what, if Ten Hag walked out of Man United, I'd pick Ange up tomorrow. Just I would.
What this
just
you
spat on the table?
Yeah, I'll spit at you in a minute. That U-turn is what, like, everything. steady.
Like another pundit.
Yeah, steady. That
calm down.
That is a big U-turn from you, from everything about Big Ange you've said over the last 18 months.
I know, but I you know what? I'm a people person, and I don't like people who get bullied and victimised. And
also,
I think he is.
But you're speaking about something from last week. I'm speaking about this interview after the North London.
I want you as a friend.
Why?
You've been washing his car for 12 months and now you're throwing him under the bus when he needs you. When I needed a neighbour, were you there? Was he bollocks? There. He's thinking about Wrexham and Tom Brady.
Exactly, yeah. I'll stab anyone in the back. And I think that a Big Ange just needs to realise the situation he's in. Calm down a little bit.
What Spurs?
What?
What is Spurs?
Exactly. Well, it's a question he needs to answer.
What? Yeah, but... oh, what are Spurs over the last 10 years? What is it they think's going on? He's put five attackers in a team to try and beat the second best team in the league. You've lost 1-0 from a set piece because your keeper's no good on set pieces. There's probably been a bit of a shove, to be fair. There could have been a red card. It was a brilliant performance from Arsenal.
But what did they offer?
I think 1-0 was the right result. But in the final third, Spurs against Leicester and Newcastle, Spurs could easily have... 10 points like Newcastle. They've got four. They need to put the. But I tell you what, someone's going to have their pants pulled down and have a right good spank soon.
Yeah, there's a lot of sexual references this morning.
Spurs are going to spank someone soon.
Don't look at me when you say that. It was absolutely horrible.
No, but I just think, you know what, with Ange, again, another foreign coach, people taking the piss out of them.
No, absolutely.
You know I'm right. Absolutely. Yeah.
If anything, up until the last 2 weeks, it's been all the other way. Oh, the media darling, Ange Postecoglou. Oh, everyone loves big Ange. Oh, he's at the... Ange is at it very good. And I think Ange is a great manager going forward. Pratt of the week is Pratt of the week for this week because the context is he's come out and he said what he said. And if you're a fan, after losing the derby, when you've got a good opportunity to go out and win or get a positive result, I just don't think that's on.
Talk about Pratt of the week. What wasn't going to get brought in here, but let's do this because we've been to acting school to play this out because this is one of our contenders for Pratt of the week. Do you want to be Jamie O'Hara or do you want to be the person who replies?
I'll be the person that replies.
Okay, so this is Jamie O'Hara, ex-Spurs player, talking about Spurs. Give me Aaron Lennon, Tom Huddleston, Robbie Keane, Jermaine Defoe, Van der Vaart, or any of these any day of the week. We sign players from Bournemouth, Burnley, Leeds and Forest, then expect championship results. Spurs head gone.
And then HL... TCO replies saying, you signed Defoe from West Ham whilst they were in the Championship, Lennon from Leeds whilst they were in the Championship, and Huddleston from Derby whilst they were in the Championship.
Yeah, but they were decent. Yeah, your acting probably didn't get it as good as mine, but ultimately, Jamie O'Hara coming out, slagging off all these players, comparing them to other players who were also bought from the Championship. And that's what I mean. It's just this melodramatic reaction. I would say to Spurs fans, as an outsider looking in, you've got exactly the right manager with exactly the right ambitions and exactly... I mean, he was pissed. I can't... You know, when he fell out with the Spurs fans after the Man City game, you got to go Team Ange. He was pissed off because you lot wanted to lose. He wants to win. The conflict within Spurs is because Ange doesn't want you to be bottlers anymore. He wants you to win every week.
Yeah, I agree.
But talking about what's going wrong with Spurs, last time I checked, you didn't finish in the top four. Last time I checked, you weren't a title contender. Last time I checked, your football was shit under Jose, Conte and Nuno. You're actually a decent footballing side now. I think you should be clinging on to him for dear life. I really, really do.
Well, it's quite interesting, but I'm not saying that one performance turns Big Ange into a bad manager. I'm just saying it for this context. Like, I'm not saying Pratt of the year, Pratt of the decade, Pratt of the century. I'm just saying you were a Pratt for doing this. But I think with everything that we were talking about on Friday... just the pressure mounting a little bit within the club, but then the backdrop to that being Big Ange has been to Yokohama Marinos. He's done this at Celtic, and Flav was speaking about it, about it takes the second season sometimes for his team to come round, and he has the same criticism every time. You press too high, you haven't got a plan B, blah, blah, blah. He's had this everywhere. So I do think it will still come good, but I don't think you help yourself by saying you're going to win in the second season.
North London is Red says, Vlad, the culture of Spurs will make every top manager look bad. I think that's a great point from World 999. I tell you what, I think the Premier League, though, it's just so... The scales is thin margins, margins. Yeah. I mean, look at Newcastle, 10 points from 12. Not particularly played that well, if you speak to Newcastle fans, but oh my God, four really, really good results. They've then got Spurs, who have played well, but have only got 4 points from 12. So fine margins. They've got to start winning, though. And I don't think it gets any easier for Spurs. I think in their next three games, they've got Man United away and Brighton away. Brentford at home, who've had a good start as well. So Spurs need to start winning, and the pressure... Look at Everton as well, four losses from four. It can start to become rhythmic. Arsenal, though, wow. You know, if Arsenal had lost that game, they'd be 5 points off Man City. They play them next week. They could have been eight off them by next Monday. But they win without Rice and Odegaard. And I think that's really, for me, we know Man City don't need to pick Rodri in the first three games and they still get 9 points. And what a message from Arsenal, because that's what they need to do. People make a big deal of no Rice and Odegaard. I personally think I wouldn't make a big deal of it. That's what you've got to do. You've got to go and win at Spurs without big players to prove that you've got a squad to win a title.
Yeah, we said that on Friday, didn't we? Like that going into this game, if they want to be title contenders, they have to win this. But as much as... So that performance is probably like they'll be talking about it when they've vintage Arsenal in terms of really good back four, very good defensive performance, 1-0 to the Arsenal, get a goal from a corner. And Arteta signing this deal, it just feels there's a real DNA and everything going forward with them. But there's just something that lingers in me that thinks we can get another result like they had at Brighton.
Mm.
And I don't want that to be the case, because it's going to be, and we'll come on to Liverpool in a bit, but now it feels clear that it's going to be Arsenal challenging Man City this season. And if they don't, it's not going to be anyone else. So the Brighton one still worries me a little bit, because it just feels like they've got that esque performance in them. But if they can take this and really just use this as the platform to go forward with, it's really exciting because, yeah, those are the two of their best players. They've done it without them, but they should do it without them.
I think there's so many subcontexts to that game, but one of the things that sort of jumped out at me was the goalkeeping performances. There was a lot in and around the six-yard box that Raya came and claimed really confidently, and I think he's number one in the league for like high claims, which are, you know, coming up and, you know, coming and taking them crosses. Whereas the goal itself, it's right on the six-yard box.
Yeah, and it had been coming as well, hadn't it?
Yeah, and you know, we were talking about it last week. Arsenal are going to target Spurs on set pieces. That ball is perfect, right on the edge of the six-yard box, dead central. There is a bit of a shove into Romero, and I spoke about it on the watch-along. I don't want to see a foul for that, but I do have sympathy that if that was against United, I would say, well, he's clearly give him a shove to give it. I mean, look, I don't think it should be a foul. But
it's just the fact they were all like, I think they brought it up in commentary, that they were all like front on when you should be side on a lot more. Like, that probably nullifies that as well.
But your goalkeeper should be coming and doing something there, punching it, getting something on it. But Vicario never does. He never does.
But that's the worrying thing as well, because that's a problem identified definitely with their set-piece coach because of how good he is. Like, it's Sunday league. Like, if you see a nervous goalie or he doesn't take one, get it in on, boys, get in and around him. Like, that's such a basic thing, and they just couldn't stop that happening.
I think when you watch it back, Arsenal's set-piece coach, probably since Christmas, has just been elite. Remember when they stopped protecting goalkeepers and Arsenal were the first one to sort of start using Ben White on it? And that's 3 points. That's one goal in the game. And it basically comes from the fact that they know Vicario is going to be sellotaped to his goal line. Then you've got, right, how do we get Gabriel away from Romero? Let Romero be in front of you. And then as the ball comes in, just give him a little bit to give yourself a back. You've got that yard, and it's so, so simple. I mean, Romero's a bit naive, really. He's got to have eyes on Gabriel. He can't be behind him. And, you know, I thought it was very good from Arsenal. I wouldn't have wanted it to be overruled. And I think Arsenal's game plan, they deserve to win it. And I didn't want a draw in that game. It doesn't help either story. I think Arsenal, to do that without Rice and Odegaard, and obviously go to City next week, which will be another big, big challenge. Talking about challenges, though, the red card, Timber, a lot of reaction to that. If I said that Jamie Redknapp was on Sky yesterday and basically said it should have been a red card, it was excessive force, it was an unnatural reaction, and Curtis Jones got one last year for it. So 3 points from there from Redknapp: excessive force, unnatural action, and Curtis Jones last year. Thoughts?
Yeah, just I think that's where we need to understand when people are going on to Sky Sports. Are you going on as a fan or as a pundit?
Or as a prat.
Or as a prat. And everyone was agreed. I was watching it with nobody, so I had to talk into an echo chamber. But I thought, he stops himself. He doesn't go in with excessive force. He sort of goes over. But I think the fight after it just caused more carnage than anything else.
Well, we'll talk about referees, because we've had the record number of yellow cards in a Premier League weekend ever, which I find incredible considering there was no bad tackles. It's obviously a directive from PGMOL, but the amazing thing I can't fathom out is, having seen the Timber thing, it's very clear to me that he's trying to do a sort of a McGeady spin.
He's trying to put his foot
on top of the ball to do the drag back, to use his other foot to go around him. He's actually trying to do a skill move. How it can be excessive force when he's actually trying to do he's not even trying to tackle him, he's trying to do a skill move. And look, at the end of the day, if you go onto a boxing ring, you're going to probably get punched. And if you play football, there's going to be times where you get kicked. It doesn't mean it's excessive force. Wasn't a red card for me. Curtis Jones got a red card last season, correctly. He did get one, but I think we were moaning saying he shouldn't have got one. So if anything,
he went a little bit more over the ball as well.
He did, but also I don't think it was a red. So look, we can be
heroes.
One just for one day. But there's a lot of moaning about the officiating, and there's plenty of reason to be it. But I think on that and time added, that's been reduced, and we're not seeing those silly red cards anymore. And it would have been such a game changer on such a contentious issue. I think they got it spot on for me.
Well, I'm surprised.
I don't think it was even a yellow, actually. Because if you're saying it's a yellow, you're acknowledging guilt. Yeah. And if you're acknowledging guilt, then you should give him a red. I don't think it was even a yellow.
But I do think you can get yellows for those sort of things. And I mean, that was indicated definitely, wasn't it, by the referee of the game. Because
what's he doing booking Vicario, though? Like, he's booking Timber for the foul. Yeah. Vicario runs into him, puts his hands on his shoulders, and then Timber grabs him on the collar. Yeah. You're getting a yellow card. You can't have one because you're having one for that. It was a bit messy, wasn't it?
Yeah, I can't believe there wasn't a red card in the game, because what, the most yellow cards ever in the first half of any game ever.
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, it just didn't warrant that, was it? Like, you've got to understand that that's a North London derby, and yeah, you shouldn't referee games differently, but just a bit of common sense that just back stuff off, because there was... The Timber one's probably the worst challenge, but in terms of intent, it's not there. So it's just... Relax.
Well, we're here to say football, and, you know, it just seems to me every single year there's some directive. Like, I used to work in a job, and basically it was like finance and stuff, and everybody's always trying to get promoted or get a bonus. So literally every Monday morning you'd get emails from people going, I think we should do this, I think we should do that. And it's almost like the PGMOs like it as well. Just leave the game alone. There's always a new directive. Like, and it's chaos. And how that weekend has got the most yellow cards in Premier League history weekends baffles me, considering I remember the Premier League when Wimbledon were in it. Yeah. And I look at that weekend and we don't get bad tackles anymore. So it's clear. Anthony Taylor on the Bournemouth-Chelsea game yesterday, and it was obviously happening a lot. We've just had the most yellow cards in a Premier League weekend, and yet we know a lot of fouls and bad tackles have been stamped out. So basically what you're saying is there's a directive making out that's one of the worst weekends we've ever had. Actually, it's one of the worst officiated weekends we've ever had, because the yellow cards are ridiculous. But the moron who's doing this, and we've got to say probably Howard Webb signed it off, what frustrates me about them, they don't understand football, because more yellow cards is going to dilute football, because more yellow cards will mean more suspensions, so good players won't be on the pitch. And we all know, red cards aren't good. You know, if you got more red cards and the game got better, yeah, I'd understand us getting excited, going, ooh. But more red cards make a game worse.
And also, they've not changed the five
yellow card.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to have people getting out for five yellow cards for maybe, like, kicking the ball away or, you know, not giving the ball back in time. And, like, imagine if you're missing... And also, it's about timing, isn't it? It's like, you could be missing Manchester City versus Arsenal for a five-card build-up eventually down the line for some absolutely minor indiscretion. So that definitely needs to be looked at.
I just don't get it. It's absolutely... We'll keep an eye on it, but it's absolutely stupid, and it's people who just don't understand football again.
Just trying to see what... I think we covered everything. Timber, most yellow cards... Go on.
What did you think about just talking about the referees of the weekend? I mean, I think that's shocking to break the yellow card record, but actually might surprise people again. Applause for the referee at Southampton, Man United. I saw it in real time and I thought he's took Garnacho out. It's a yellow card. It's cynical. But then when you watch it back, I was surprised when he put the red out, but when you watch it back, he is trying to take Garnacho out. Hmm. He does catch him eye on the knee. I mean, technically, it's a red card. It's a good decision.
It's a out of control challenge. And if you've played football at any level, you all know where that challenge spawns from. Like, frustration, a winger beating you, you're 2-0 down, you're like, you're going to get it. Yeah. And then you can try and play like, oh yeah, but we all know where that comes from. And I think a right red. Just back to North London Derby before we move off that. One thing that you were tweeting about, players hugging in the tunnel.
Yeah. Were people doing it?
Yeah, they were doing it in the
team. Oh, I can't stand it.
Yeah.
Oh, don't get me started on this. I've had a pop at Bruno, who I love, at Man United, for, you know, captain of Man United, congratulating Chelsea player who wouldn't play for his last season. I find it incredible. I think one of the last things football fans can sort of pin their hat on is rivalry. And you have it when it's Blues Villa. We have it with Liverpool, Man United.
You literally just said that Big Ange is right for saying
fans,
that every game is the same.
No, he's a manager.
Yeah, but you're...
No. In a dressing room, he's got to get consistency by getting players to not just get up for Arsenal. He's got to get them up for Bournemouth. That's a different thing. Okay. As football fans, what we're doing is, you know, we don't want to see people hugging and kissing in a bloody tunnel before a big game.
It depends what the context is.
No, well, we don't want to see that. And I don't want to see... I mean, I don't... Look, maybe it's just old age. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's just old school.
I think you are being a bit of a boomer when it comes to that.
Times are changing, I get it. But it doesn't mean I have to like it.
If you saw me in the tunnel and I've not seen you for 3 months and you didn't give me a little hug and a kiss, I'd be disappointed.
I absolutely wouldn't. I'd be Gary Neville on you.
I'd be like that.
Gary Neville and Phil.
Come to Papa.
Just absolutely ignoring each other. You come around on Sunday for roast? No. Just shut up. Don't ever
ask
me about it.
Give me a little peck on the cheek?
No, nothing. Nothing. This is going to happen. And interacting on social media with rivals. Fuck off. Look, I don't care if I'm in the minority. Sometimes I do think about, I don't want to upset viewers and stuff, but on this one, I'm really adamant. I don't care if I'm in the minority. I'm allowed my opinion, and rivalry in fans is really important. And if you're wearing my club shirt and we're paying you to wear it, don't be tweeting, hugging in the tunnel with a rival player. I hate it.
Do you know what?
Do it. Just send him a DM.
Well, that's what I mean.
Send him a bloody cockpick if you want. I don't give a shit.
That's escalated very quickly.
No, but you know what I mean? I don't care what you do in your own time, but don't put it publicly.
Yeah. Is that why you've been sending me? No. Just on that, though, I think, you can send him a DM, and it's almost like a lot of girls do it when, you know, they may post a picture, maybe they're newly single, they're like, absolutely fire, you look stunning, brilliant. Yeah, just send him a message. It's all fine. You can do that privately.
But, I've mentioned the Bruno on the United stand, so it doesn't really matter if I mention it on here, but, you know, what's Bruno thinking on Saturday night when Chelsea, who will be competing with United, hopefully, for top four from a United point of view, I think Chelsea will be in the top four race. What is Bruno thinking on a Saturday night when Instagram Sancho's there loving Chelsea, hasn't tweeted anything about Man United for months, and captain of Man United goes, nice to see a smile on your face, great player. What is he thinking that he can't put that in a DM? Why are you doing it publicly? It's just like, what do you possibly... Do you want to move to Chelsea? Because other than that, you're not going to get United fans going, yeah, good one, Bruno. Yeah, it's just
no,
weird.
And I get the support angle, but yeah, I do think it can just be done in a message.
I respect people who think it's fine and it's not that deep. I do, but personally, I love the rivalry. I love the Roy Keane and Vieira in the tunnel. I loved it when Neville wouldn't acknowledge Schmeichel for Man City.
As fans, we love that.
I don't want to see him bloody two-footing him. I don't want to see that.
I think it's the context, because obviously, I think Vicario and... No, not Vicario. Raya and Porro did it, I think, whoever it was. Like, sometimes with the foreign players, I get it a little bit more. Like, if it's your captain of your club and someone who's been there a long time, I think it goes into a different folder.
Look at this super chat from Matthew Showbrook. He says, personally, feel a lot of reactionary Liverpool fans out there. Forest result was disappointing, but to go from praising the entire team, then say they're all trash is weird. There will be bumps in the road. Matthew, I think that is a fantastic comment, not just because it's a super chat, but also because it's a fantastic comment. I didn't watch the game because it was a 3 o'clock game, and I just watched United and had to go and get some stuff from the shops for anybody asking. Fish cakes.
Been accused.
Fish cakes and M&Ms.
And where were you at 3 o'clock
didn't
on Saturday?
Didn't have them collectively, although might be actually quite
fish
nice.
Fish cakes with what?
I bought some fish cakes and M&Ms, but I didn't eat them together. No. Although it could work.
Nutty fish cakes.
You know what, where I will draw the line, and it's not my club, so Liverpool fans, jump in. I will not eat... I will not have this idiotic flip-flop nonsense from an outside perspective. Again, my opinion, and I'm going to stick with it. If you think something else, that's fine. We should have signed... It's because we didn't sign players in the summer. It's got nothing to do with that. Got nothing to do with that. I'm not going to sit here and praise the fact that Liverpool went down a less trodden road by going with a manager and a team that Klopp was building and deciding that we're going to continue with this project and we're not going to disrupt it. They play really good football. They win their first three games. We're talking about potential title contenders. They lose to Forest in shocking circumstances, and we'll discuss why. But the team hasn't got injuries. It's a very, very strong team. It's got a very, very strong bench. It loses 1-0, and then you get people going, it's because we didn't sign anyone. You can't praise winning at Old Trafford and everything else you've done and then lose to Forest and go, because it's got nothing to do with that. For me, it was just a bad day at the office. Signing players could have gone even worse.
Yeah.
You know, it disrupts it. So I think that is really, really poor analysis to say it's because of... I think, if anything, I just think it was complacent, Will. What was it Carragher said? We should be resting players.
I think he said last week, it could be resting players when it came to the Forest game. But also, I think the context to the everyone after the game who maybe is annoyed and started saying this and that about Arne Slot is we're just living in the Man City world, aren't we? So, yeah. Like, some people are...
That title race could be over now.
Well, that's what I mean. People are putting Liverpool in the title contenders race after beating Manchester United, obviously Arsenal, and everything that we say, you have to be perfect, don't you, to beat Manchester City? So if you are losing a game against Nottingham Forest, I can understand a certain type of fan that's maybe saying our title race is over, when really we all know Liverpool this season, top four, that's good. So it's again...
It's the frustration, isn't it? It's the same as Brighton, Arsenal, where you know those 2 points are going to... But they drew with 10 men.
Yeah, yeah.
You're still frustrated. But to lose to Nottingham Forest at home with the team they put out, the start of the season they had, you know what? I understand Liverpool fans wanting to scream. They know it's illogical and they're not going to do it, but you almost want to sell Salah, sack Slot, because you're so frustrated. But logically, Liverpool fans know it is simply a blip in the road, and it's a massively frustrating one, but it's got nothing to do with not signing players. It's got nothing to do with Slot being shit. It's got nothing to do with Salah or Trent being past it. These results happen. I mean, look at Villa at Arsenal last year in a time when you never thought it would happen. And if anything... It's a testament to the Premier League if you take Man City out of it.
Yeah,
you still can get these results that pop up that you don't expect. And looking at it, we knew as United fans that Southampton away, even if we win 3-0, people are going to go, it's only Southampton. And yet a lot of people would have been thinking they might lose this, you know, half 12 after the international break. You'd look at Liverpool, everybody had that as a 3 or 4-0, didn't they?
Yeah.
No injuries. After the international
break.
Two
captains.
At Anfield. And maybe that was a bad thing. Maybe they almost took it for granted.
And also, on the other side of it, Nottingham Forest played a perfect game plan. And that's what's so frustrating, even from when you see the likes of Southampton, a little bit less against Manchester United, but go back to some of the games that they've had at the start of the season. They need to be defensive. They need to have changed their system to be counteractive to what's going on. Forest was the perfect example of that, that midfield three all closing together, closing off the channels, the back four, just working as a unit. And Nuno is the king of that, isn't he? Mm. And he's gone out there and got a victory. But for Liverpool, if it continues, then it becomes a crisis. But I don't see it being like that, starting with the Champions League this week.
Mark, if it's all right for you, I'd like to hear from our halftime sponsors.
No, I don't. Simon Muller says, just when Mark thought there was no more screamers scored in the Premier League, Barnes, Shaw, Duran were listening. Hey, I do want to say that obviously we've got the podcast and now we're live on YouTube as well, but we were talking about when we started the podcast over a year ago, Goldbridge Saves Football, we wanted to really focus in on the things that, you know, maybe the mainstream don't, and also follow through on it. So PGMOL, VAR, the mainstream won't talk about it because they're all holding hands behind the scenes and, you know, it's collectively for the better good. And we want to call that out when it was an issue like it was last year. But one of the bigger issues is actually saving football. And I think big shout out to what's been going on over the last few weeks. Over the international break, we had that Barclays thing, didn't we? Where people were flashbacks to what was good. We know there's not as many screamers. We know there's not as many people taking people on. But this season, he feels like the epicenter of saving football is Aston Villa. And I know you're not going to like this, but you've got Morgan Rodgers taking people on, getting people off their seats. You've got Duran scoring an absolute thunderbolt bastard of a goal that would be right into the 2006 Goal of the Month awards.
Yeah.
I tell you what, Harvey Barnes as well. Shaw's took a bit of a deflection.
At least he's shooting.
I think the players are listening, Will. Yeah. I think the players are listening to the fans and going, hey, I actually do want to shoot from distance. The fans want me to shoot from distance. Let's have a pop.
Yeah, I mean, Duran's goal, it was like, for it to go in there, and I still don't think the keeper was at fault.
Winning goal as well.
Winning goal from being 2-0 down.
Yeah,
2-1.
Yeah. Cracking game.
Harvey Barnes as well, getting one late on. I just think the more that we can see of it, the more dribbling. And if it is Villa, so be it. And but also, the response that you had to your clip that we put up, that was
the
over
Morgan Rodgers.
That was over 1 million views. So as much as that's nice for us, and I'll be on the scenes doing the TikTok, they just feel that there's a sort of there's wanting for that, isn't there? But plus with the TikTok thing, and football is a sport, but it's entertainment, and we need more of this. The Spurs Arsenal game, some of it's just like you're just zoning in and out, like left. I hate it. People get it. Put their foot on the ball. Roll it right, and they just look so nonchalant, and then it's just like, oh,
I think we have almost become like Oliver Twist when he's asking for more. porridge, and it's like you've got the dictators saying, you've had enough. We're not Oliver Twist. We're football fans, and football can be so good. Football can exhilarate you. And to be honest, it wouldn't matter who scored that Duran goal at the weekend, as long as it wasn't against Manchester United. And even then, I still would have gone, what a goal, but I'd have been pissed off. I don't care who's doing it. And I watched that Villa game, and yeah, again, very, very entertaining Aston Villa. They played really, really well. But when Duran scores that, I'm like, oh my shit, what an absolute screamer. And then you look on social media and everyone's doing the same, and you're like, you know what? I think about what I grew up with, and those goals were happening every week, and they're not happening every week now. Why aren't they happening every week now? It's a tactical thing. You know, look at what Pep's done to Grealish. You know, he's become not the Grealish of Villa. And so I will applaud it, and I hope more people do it, because Newcastle have got 3 points because Eddie Howe allowed Harvey Barnes to do it. Villa have got 3 points because Emery allowed Duran to do that. I'm not saying that Pep wouldn't let it. Man City do have a shot from outside the box, but these players are capable of doing it. They've definitely been restricted from doing it. Yeah. They're not allowed to do it.
Well, it's a numbers game, yeah, isn't it? Your percentage of that is not worth that shot from the XG, blah, blah, blah. But then, the antidote for the way it's infected the football pyramid, I think it was Bolton Huddersfield.
Oh
my God, if you've not seen the clip, have a look at it online. That, like, I think Bolton were 4-0 down at the time, 3-0 down at the time, in the 81st minute, I think it was.
What are you passing out from the back for in League One? I mean, do it a little. You know what?
Wait till you get there tonight, mate.
I know, but it's like, do it a little bit.
Not when you're 3-0 down.
I don't want to use the word infection, because Pep Guardiola is a good manager. There's no doubt about it. But the obsession with Pep in the English game, I've never seen a manager like it. I mean, Sir Alex Ferguson dominated the scene with a footballing style that was fantastic, but probably wasn't as chess-like and easy to try and implement. I mean, Pep's style is amazing, and it's very, very meticulous, but you can replicate it on a basic level.
Yeah, yeah.
And so many teams, even in the National League, when we watched that final with Solihull Moors, they were a better technically football side than Bromley, who were a bit more old-fashioned. But what are you doing passing out from the back in League One? Like, sometimes you just got to put it in the mixer, get rid of the ball. And I'm like, we need an antidote to this, because it is very, very... I don't want to see the volume of goals that we're seeing where people try and pass out from the back, make a mistake, and it ends up in the back of the net. It's
boring.
If you're going to do it well.
Yeah.
But don't fucking just replicate it in the lower leagues or the lower part of the Premier League. It's like, look, take people on, shoot from distance. I want to see more of it. The reaction to it this weekend, to see people who aren't Newcastle fans or Villa fans just saying, what a goal, they enjoyed it. That's why you watch football, and hear more to it. And clearly players are taking notice. Tell your manager to fuck off and have a shot.
Well, that's what I think here at Goldby Chase Football. If you are stuck, if you are in need, please get in touch, because if you're a fan and you need us to tell your board, or if you're a fan and you need us to tell your manager, if you're a player and you're stuck, get in touch. Mark or myself will have a word. I think Ian Evatt needs to probably have a bit of a look at himself if you're trying to get your team playing out from the back, 3-0 down at home, and then you go and concede a goal like that. It just, there's philosophy, but you need a plan A, B, C. Let's change football for the better.
Who was on the receiving end of that absolute big shot? Dyche. 3-2 losses from 2-0 up. You know what? I turned it on. I'd missed the first 20 minutes because I was eating my fish cakes. But I'd missed the first 2 minutes. You know what? I was thinking about doing a watch-along for Villa Everton, but I decided against it. And I actually wish I had, because I did end up sitting watching most of the game.
Best game of the weekend?
2-0. Villa again. They were the best game opening weekend against West Ham. Definitely the best game this weekend. Arsenal, three out of four. They've been the best game of the weekend. Arsenal, Villa as well. Villa, very, very good side at the moment. And they're saving football. He hates to say it. I love to say it. But bottom line, 2-0 down to Everton. 20 minutes gone. I knew Villa would win that game.
Really?
I knew it. I knew they would win that game. I thought Everton have shot their load way too early here. Although Calvert-Lewin, that high line of Villa, still let them in. But
he looked so nonchalant.
Four from four.
If you're Sean Dyche and they were 2-1 up, weren't they, when Calvert-Lewin went through for that one-on-one, when he was like, I think he thought he was offside, then tried to cut in and, like, Ironically, he did better with the when it was could have made it 3-3. But yeah, I think. But to be fair, speaking about Big Ange, watching Sean Dyche's post match interview, he was just very measured. Like, and they've conceded a lot of goals and they're in a lot of trouble. But
they'll stay up though, won't they?
I just felt like, you know, it's not going to panic, and hopefully, and I think it will work out. A lot. I'm worried about Wolves, which I said at the start of the season. You laughed at me, but they're right down there. But with Sean Dyche, what is the thing is, get rid of Sean Dyche to get someone like Sean Dyche in. Because you can't start bringing someone in to go like, we're going to pass out from the back now going forward. We're 20th in the league. We've conceded 84 goals in three games.
But then again, I look at Everton, and I did say this last week. I look at Michael Keane and I look at Ashley Young, and, you know, Michael Keane should not be getting beat on that goal from Ollie Watkins. I mean, Michael Keane is many things, but... And he's not good at many things, but the things he is good at is not getting beat in the air on the back post like that, and then he gets beat on the back end.
Should be keener to win that header.
Yeah. Ashley Young was crap last season, and they've given him a new contract. I mean, I know Everton are financially in trouble, but they're a mess. And look, Everton have got a great, great, great fan base. And, you know, when I grew up, Everton were a big team. So I just think that they're not going to stay up. I mean, I called them Viagra at the weekend, because they'll stay up, but what's the point in Viagra if you're not going to do anything with it?
Nice.
You know, it's, oh, look, you're standing proud, but you're not doing anything with it. And I think that's Everton at the moment. They just, I think they need a change. I look at Bournemouth, and you look at Ipswich, and you look at some of the teams in the bottom half who play good football, but they're never going to get in the top four. But you look at Everton, they don't play good football, but we will stay up. And the only reason they're going to stay up is because Southampton are clearly going to go down. Leicester and Ipswich will be favourites to go down. And Everton will somehow get 35 points, and that will keep them up. And if that's what Everton's future is, we're staying up because we're not as shit as the teams that are getting promoted. It's just not...
Well, they're waiting for new owners. Like, they're waiting for a catalyst to be new owners. And until that happens...
Four losses in four ain't acceptable, is it?
No, it's not.
Everton are going, yeah, but we'll stay up.
I don't think they will. Like, you only got to look at the season when Southampton, Leeds and Leicester came down that year, where everyone was like, well, no one would have saw that coming at the start of the season.
So, do you genuinely think Ipswich and... I mean, they got Ipswich point at Brighton. It's very impressive. Yeah, yeah. I know draws don't really get the glamour, but that was really good. And Leicester were very unlucky against Palace. You know, I'll put my hands up and say, if that point for Ipswich is great. Yeah. And if Leicester had beat Palace, that's great as well.
Yeah, and well, it feels like Palace are faltering, and then... I still feel like, well, Wolves are down there. I still feel Brentford could come into it as well. I think Pep Guardiola mentioned it in his press conference after the game, saying about Thomas Frank potentially moving to a top European side after that. So I think we'll have a proper relegation battle this year, because I think there's quite a few shit teams.
They will be back. Just Terp said about Branthwaite. I like that O'Brien who came on. I think if they can get Branthwaite and O'Brien at centre-back, they'll be better at the back.
But, and get rid of Ashley Young.
But they've still got problems, Everton, but I don't see them going down.
No. Well, I do, actually. Zudio says, Mark picking Van de Ven over Gabriel in your 11 on Friday. Got a question for both of you. Who was your favourite player growing up? We'll finish on that. Love the show. Thanks, Shock. Simon Muller, we read that one. Daniel Sturridge has commented,
not the real one.
I'm 19 and I can't stand the niceness of football nowadays. You're going to war with them, not meeting up. You should want to you shouldn't want to interact with them.
That's the sort of youth that we want to hear about in football. You know, people.
Can you edit? Graphic designer.
Rivalry is not age specific. You know, you don't have to be a modern snowflake who thinks, oh, let's just all be nice. Let's just be like nice. Let's hug in the tunnel. Let's get into the replies of rivals. You bollocks. Let's have a bit of rivalry.
Yeah.
Football's one of the last things where you can actually do it.
Sandeep says, hi, Mark. It's my birthday today. Might treat myself to some scampi fries and crisps. Or, by the way, would like to see Xerxes and Hoyland combine on the pitch. You can't have any champion fries because somebody pinched them and we're running low.
What about this then? Manchester City's trial starts today. It's going to run for ages. I don't think there's going to be much public updates, but there was a statement from Martin O'Neill. Well, not a statement, an interview with Martin O'Neill.
Martin O'Neill.
I stood out outside his house. I'd like to make a statement about
that little
this.
Britain one.
Yeah.
I fell.
So basically, Martin O'Neill, former European Cup winner, actually, as a player, but also decent manager, Celtic fans, Leicester fans.
Very, very good.
Wickham.
Biography, autobiography.
Nice guy, apparently.
And he reads it as well, and it's very good to listen to.
I've got a good book as well. football, according to Mark Goldbridge, which I also read. But I'm not comparing the two, just by them both.
They're very different, but similar in some ways as well.
One's a European Cup winner and multi, you know, winner as a manager, and I'm just a
And one played under
bedroom vlogger.
One played under Clough.
Yeah. But yeah, what I was going to say is that he was asked last week about Man City and the Chargers, and he came out with a statement, Will, that really sort of thought we'll bring this in, because he basically said that regardless of what happens with Man City, even if they get found guilty, Pep Guardiola is still a GOAT. Absolutely not.
I don't disagree with him.
I do.
In terms of, because pre-Man City as well, there's GOAT-like material there from Pep Guardiola anyway.
Yeah, but in this country, we don't talk about managers being the GOAT who manage Barcelona and Bayern Munich. You know, we don't talk about Ancelotti a lot. Fans do, but in the media, he's talking about what he's achieved in the Premier League. Swivel on it.
Yeah, but what, you should bring in Ancelotti there. He didn't achieve much at Everton, so does that take him out of GOAT status?
No, but look, if we're talking about Premier League, Pep can take... Get all your trophies, all your awards, put them in your bag because you got them from cheating. No, I'm sorry, that's how it works. If Man City get charged and get found guilty, tough one, Pep, but your record in the Premier League is completely and utterly, factually done. Because the charges are to do with 2008 to 2018, most of it before Pep even came in. And whilst Pep would be collateral, the structure that Pep walked into will have been built on cheating. So therefore, if I get into the fastest car and I win a load of titles, how have I won it? Did I win it on my ability? Maybe, but you also did it in a car that was built on cheating. So I think
Premier League, I agree.
Barcelona and Bayern, fine, we'll judge that. But the way I listened to it was like, oh, even if they get done, Pep's still a great coach. Well, he is, but I'm not judging him on Man City because I can't. You know, maybe Ben Johnson was a very quick runner, but he decided to put a bit of stuff in his body to make him run even quicker. You don't get the gold medal. You don't pass go. You go straight to jail. I don't think he did go to jail, but you know what I mean.
Oh, is he a sprinter?
Yeah, Ben Johnson, 88, Seoul Olympics. Destroyed Carl Lewis.
I was going to watch the Linford Christie's got a documentary out, which
was good.
Have you watched it?
Yeah, it was good.
I'd be quite interested because that's someone I know about but don't really know about.
But seriously, you cannot judge Pep Guardiola at Man City if Man City get charged with cheating. There's an asterisk next to it.
I agree. I was being facetious.
No, but what I will say is you might have been onto a good point. Would Man City have been successful with Pep if they weren't? If they didn't have these charges, probably. But we can't live in a world of probably.
I don't think they'd be as dominant as they have been. He is a machine. And also just that motivate. Like, the worrying thing is with all of this, isn't it? Like, we're just waiting on tenterhooks to see if he's going to come back next season. And that's what we need him out. And that's how good he's been.
Yeah, I've always said I would love to have... It's a bit like saying I'd like to have seen Messi play in the Premier League. I'd love to have seen Pep take over a club that didn't have a checkbook, but, you know, I don't want to give him to like Stoke, but
like
if he'd have took Arsenal after Wenger, yeah, or a Spurs, you know, someone with, or a Liverpool, you know, something with a bit of a challenge to it. Because I think he's capable of that. I'm not saying Pep's a fraud by any sense. I think he's a very, 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 very methodical coach. But obviously...
He's a bold fraud.
Everywhere Pep's been has been a silver spoon, hasn't it?
But that's like, you know, you use your F1 reference there. The best drivers get in the best cars because they are the best drivers.
I think Pep could have won a... Look at Sir Alex.
Yeah.
He won Premier League sometimes and you'd go, was that the best team in the league? I think Alan Hansen said it. You could put Sir Alex in charge of anyone in the top four. Mm. And he would have won the league on his management style. I certainly think Pep could have done that. But obviously we won't have the evidence of that.
The super chats are flying in. We'll come on to those before we end the episode. But 50 minutes we've been on. The time flies when you're having fun. Champions League starts this week as well. I'm excited to watch that. I've given you a chance to revise your prediction.
What was my prediction?
I thought you said Liverpool, didn't you?
I'm happy to stick with Liverpool.
Are you?
Yeah.
Real Madrid?
Yeah, I'll stick with Liverpool.
That was the most
But I didn't want to go Real Madrid. I always go a bit out there with my Champions League prediction and I don't want to go Real Madrid and Man City. But look, I still agree with Ange. I think Spurs could win a trophy and I think Liverpool could win the Champions League. Why not?
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see how that format kicks off. Also, Tuesday, Wednesday,
Thursday
games
week.
Going on, and then Europa League's got a whole
next week. Yeah.
So that's, I don't mind that.
Yeah.
Then it all kicks off. Super Chat's flying, and Jack says, I'm 23.
Well done.
And I prefer the rivalry with players too. Thank you, Jack. NAU says, Mark, last week you said that two defenders would start for Arsenal. With that statement, you should go back to TalkSport with that level of opinion.
Well, you should go back to bed and get some more sleep because you're tired. Like your opinion. Because just because Arsenal win 1-0 doesn't mean that Van de Ven and Porro and Adogi wouldn't get in a Spurs in an Arsenal team. Because it's my combined 11, it's not yours. Bloody hell. No, but look, I mean, Spurs conceded because Vicario and Romero made a mistake.
Yeah.
Apart from that, defensively, they were quite good. Both defences were very good. I mean, look, I actually thought first 45 minutes, it was a really high, intense game.
It was, wasn't it?
And then
it?
Second half, it just sort of fizzled, didn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Let's decide Pratt of the Week because we've had lots of nominations. So let's just go back through them because there's been plenty of them nominated. Big Ange for me. I'm putting him forward. Jamie Redknapp was also in there. Any players hugging before the game in the tunnel should be in there. Bruno Fernandes, do you want to put in there?
Yeah, I don't...
Jack Stevens. Oh, sorry, one thing we've not spoke about. Dwight York, that you've spoke about him on the United Stand this morning. Also in that block of shit that was coming out.
Well, it was all started by Keys, wasn't it?
Oh, they love it. Did you see when he did the Joby McHale podcast the other day?
No.
Yeah, don't. Dwight York basically said Chelsea and Tottenham.
You know, if I saw Richard Keys, all I would say is, you know.
Did you see when he was out in London the other week? He was tweeting, he was like, he must have been pissed. He was tweeting his day in London. And he was like, just send Jamie Redknapp. But didn't want to speak to him and wouldn't speak to him anyway. If I was just like, just put your phone down, mate.
I just feel like if I saw Richard Keys, I'd go, you're embarrassment, mate.
Yeah.
And just walk away.
I just wouldn't speak to him.
And he'd be there throwing his shoes at you. Yeah. Oh, who are you? Sky be nothing without me. Nothing. Me and Andy made that.
Andy Gray, great co-coms. Dwight York, Chelsea and Tottenham are not ahead of Manchester United.
Yeah, well, I think the context to this was that Richard Keys had said to Dwight York that if you're a top, Man United can't attract top players anymore. If you're a top player, you're going to go to Arsenal, Man City, Liverpool, Chelsea or Spurs ahead of Man United. And I think then Dwight York said Chelsea and Spurs are not ahead of Man United. So the context is that. And yeah, I just think some people, whilst we react and have an opinion, I think some people go searching for the headline, and that's just a headline searcher for me. But top players don't want to go to Man United anymore. So De Ligt's not a top player?
No.
Well, he clearly is a top player. He is a top player. And last season we took top players, didn't we? Mason Mount was a top player.
You can take top players.
Liverpool were linked with Mason Mount. So top players do want to go to Man United. Paul Pogba came to Man United when we were in the Europa League. So top players will always come to Manchester United because top players will go to Saudi Arabia. Top players, who, I mean, straight away, Richard, you know, top players, some of them have got morals like you. It's like they will go where the money is. Yeah. And if Man United stump the money up, they'll go there. So it's an idiotic statement because you're basically saying that every footballer is only focused on winning trophies and they don't think about money, status, PR. If you go to Man United, you'll have 100,000 followers, you'll have 1 million followers in 5 minutes. So some players will go to Man United for the wrong reasons. But also, I think Dwight York disagreed with it, and I would disagree with it because Spurs probably can't pay the wages Man United are playing as well.
Yeah.
Man United have won more than Spurs in the last 2 years and Chelsea. So I don't think there's a massive difference between Chelsea, Man United and Spurs, but I still think Man United would be a bigger pull because of the name, the size.
Well, and it's the chance to sort of, if you're a player of that ilk, you want to restore that history as well, don't you? You think you can maybe do that on
and
your
no
back?
No disrespect to Spurs and Chelsea at all. The London pull is big, definitely. But I think when Richard Keys says, you know, top players don't want to play for Man United, they want to play for Chelsea and Spurs, he's talking out his hairy arse.
How do you know
it's
hair?
Hands. Look at his, he's even got hair on his bloody top knuckle. Wow.
You've been watching the coverage intensely.
Yeah, but one thing you do need
to be corrected on. You mentioned Saudi Arabia and you said everyone's gone there for the money. Obviously, famously, Gerrard's over there and he's obviously not gone for the money. Three reasons were the project, the fans and the style of football. So
There's nothing wrong with going to Saudi Arabia. There's nothing wrong with going to China. But what I'm saying is that not every player
Gerrard's not done that. Yeah. Gerrard's gone for the football reason.
If you speak to his primary school teacher, he was always interested in Saudi Arabia.
The flag.
you know, the Gulf War. He was like, I'd just love to live in Saudi Arabia. It looks great.
One I must apologise for, and Omar, thank you for sending your second donation. You commented at the start, we just missed it. Mark is the GOAT. Love what you do from San Diego, California.
Love that.
I was in California this summer and I'd love to go back. So please take
me. He was dreaming.
Yeah, I was California dreaming, baby. It's now time for EFL Watch.
What about Pratt of the Week?
Oh, we're not decided. Yeah, who do you want? You're saving football.
Well, I think Richard Keys bloody deserves it for that. But no, I'm going to stick with what I'm... Look, this is why Pratt of the Week's very good, because it's not always going to be Jamie O'Hara or Simon Jordan or whoever else, because it's too easy to do that. I'm actually going to give it to somebody I love. So it's not you. I'm going to give it to Bruno. I just do not agree with the captain of a football club who is in a rival with another football club bigging up the guy who helped them win late on. I would have loved a Chelsea draw. Chelsea draw is a great result for Man United. And I don't think getting into Jadon Sancho's replies saying, basically, well done, is just send him a DM. So, Pratt of the Week for me.
Big Ange for me.
Big Ange for why?
Just for that comment. I just think it's stupid. But it doesn't mean I don't think he's a good manager. You can say things and not everything's mutually exclusive.
So basically, we're both of our candidates are people that we love and respect.
Yeah.
Just shows you how unbiased we are.
Mine would be, EFL Watch now. It's been a very interesting week. It's going to be
a great weekend.
Yeah, well, you do.
FPL.
When you pick the best
FPL,
teams.
FPL, I got about, Isaac. I mean, God, Salah, yeah. Jota, yeah. Isaac. Yeah. Right, let me. Pedro didn't even play.
Well, I text you saying, is Garnacho going to start? And you said no, but then Pedro didn't play and Garnacho came in.
Twansebi did well. Delit, I had Delit. I ended up with about 65 points.
Oh, that's good this week.
Which is quite good.
Well,
Man United won. Charlton won.
Yeah.
Notts County won.
Yeah.
Solihull Moors won.
Yeah.
Coventry drew in the Championship, so I had a good weekend.
A very disappointing one for me. Wayne Rooney's Plymouth beat Sunderland, who were top of the league, 3-2. In the last minute. I mean, you know, we spoke about Man United when they win, the amount of like stuff that comes out about them and their back, Rashford's this, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Wayne Rooney won, and because he ran down the touchline and screamed a bit, everyone was like, great. It's great to see the passion from Wayne Rooney. Even though he's won a Champions League, it still means more to him scoring a last-minute goal in the Championship. Yeah.
I bet it doesn't.
I bet it doesn't. And also, relax.
Good result for Plymouth, though.
Yeah, great. Happy for Pie Face. Can't wait to see the vlog. Love his vlogging channel. Nothing against Pie Face. Nothing against Plymouth. Just Wayne Rooney, everybody, relax.
That's a big win though for Rooney. I mean, I've got a 5-minute section on this, just breaking it down. The tactics, the management.
Yeah.
But beating Sunderland.
Yeah, great.
Who were top.
Yeah. Is it literally what I just said?
Great result for
fantastic. Yeah.
Not a great result for Plymouth.
No.
A great result for Rooney. What the headline should be.
Not a great result for Plymouth. Not a great result for a great result for football in general going forward.
Wayne Rooney,
but
the legend.
All of that is just a byproduct, because tonight we're out on the town where we're working, but we're off to St Andrews, the home of football, to see one of the biggest games, not just League One, not just the EFL, I think the whole footballing world has ever seen. As Mark mentioned earlier, Goldbridge, Brazier, Brady, Beckham, Reynolds.
I can't believe Beckham's going to be there.
Well, that's what's been said. It might be another ploy. And McElhenney. I don't know if Reynolds is actually there. Going down to the game. Blues versus Wrexham will be there.
Live!
And it's live. We'll be doing a vlog, which will be out hopefully tomorrow. But are you excited?
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
No.
It's the hottest ticket in town.
Yeah, but, probably a draw would be good for Charlton.
Yeah. Yeah, you get. Why don't you go in your Charlton top? That would be good.
Oh yeah, where is it? Yeah, take that.
Burn it.
They'll love it.
But no, it's interesting.
I'll get myself down the. What's the pub called in Peaky Blinders?
The Garrison.
I'll get myself down the Garrison, which has been closed for years.
The Roost is the one for that. If you want a little pint.
Hen and Chickens used to be a big blues pub.
Really?
Up the back of the Paragon.
I've never
Bradford Street around there.
I've a little walk through Digbeth as well on the way. But no, I'm very excited. I think it's gonna be a very interesting game. A lot of eyes on it, so you'll probably get a lot of probably a lot of what we're doing today. Why are they trying to pass out from the back? But two interesting styles. Wrexham play without the ball, Blues play with the ball. Jay Stansfield, all that money spent.
Son of Lisa.
So we're excited, and that'll be there tomorrow.
Lovely stuff. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Absolutely love that. Loads and loads of topic points. So get your comments in, as always. I think we covered everything.
Yeah, we covered everything on my running order has been ticked off, Mark.
Yeah, lovely. Well, we'll be back live on Friday at midday again for our Premier League preview show. This was the Premier League review show. And thank you for being part of it. Make sure you smash a like and subscribe. Take care.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.